Hagman Report.
We've had a great show as always. If you joined us late, first hour we talked about news, current events, and some investigative findings. Then we had Andrew Kerr from the Citizens Audit on from 8 to 8:30, and then Chad Prather on in the last segment, which was a great interview. Now we have Stan Deo from standeo.com. Folks, bookmark Stan's website. He joins us each and every Tuesday right here in our third hour, and we got a whole list of things to talk about tonight. Stan, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back. Good to be back. Everybody's well and hail over there.
Yeah.
Well, for the most part.
Hey, there Stan. You are. I wonder whether you were coming back, Doug.
I was right here all along. I was just quiet. No, you know, it's great to have you. It's great to talk with you. Folks, standale.com is his website. Show images up for tonight. So get, you know, direct your browsers to standale.com. And of course, I must dutifully mention Dare to Prepare, Prudent Places, Prophetic Perils, and all of the goodies at standale.com. So, but, yeah, no, thanks for asking. Everyone's good here. You're feeling well, I take it, because, you know, it's been kind of rough for you here this, past several weeks, it seems like.
Yeah, we've, on top of that, contracted some kind of a nasty cold, and then I gave it to Holly, and so I'm kind of on the mend, and she's kind of on the sinking ship at the moment, so. In spite of all that, it's been a very good week already, so we're enjoying watching the news on President Trump, getting a kick out of all the things they're bringing up to degrade the man or whatever.
Yeah, you know, it is absolutely amazing to see what I've been following the social networking feed of the, I'll call them domestic terrorists, because to me that's what they are. And it's just amazing to see that the stuff that they're pulling, that if any one of us would have done any portion of that to Obama or Hillary, man, we'd be in a prison cell somewhere. But that's
a big dark hole somewhere.
Yeah. Well, so the last time you were on was prior to the inauguration. Now it's post inauguration. So we've got, I'm just curious, what did you think of the inauguration?
I thought it was great. In fact, I was amused a number of times looking at former presidents and ladies listening to President Trump give him a dressing down from the pulpit there. I thought it was fun.
You know, this atmosphere, the hostilities from all these different protesters or whatever you want to call them, rioters, to the... Well, what's most shocking to me is the media's willingness to promote not violence per se, but to promote that hostility and continue the insanity with lies that they make up and whatnot. It seems that it's getting to a ridiculous point that I'm starting to believe that they're doing it for a much deeper reason than we can even imagine right now, or they're just trying to really foment as much hate against Trump as possible, because what they're doing is they're making up lies. They're attacking him for things they did themselves. The one example today is, you know, CNN talking about Trump's allegations of voter fraud on the left, from illegals voting and dead people voting for Hillary Clinton. Now CNN saying that that's delegitimizing the integrity of the election, when for, you know, a month straight they've been hammering how Russia influenced our election, and, you know, that was definitely more delegitimizing to the election than what Trump said. But where do you see all this insanity going?
Well, there's a laughable side, and then there's a serious side. Obviously, you're hitting on the serious side of that. I think it was New York Times today published an article about the illegal voters, illegal immigrant voters that weren't really registered. You know, the 3 to 5 million that President Trump said there might be, and he's going to do an investigation. That's in the main article, but in the headlines for it, they're saying that Spicer, that's his name, isn't it, Holly, the news guy? Yeah. Anyway, he comes out and says, you know, President Trump is going to look into this. This is what he thinks. And New York Times says he's buying into the lie that President Trump believes. You know, and so before you even get into the article, they're biasing you to saying it's a lie he believes in it. You know, he's just crazy. And so it's Jell-O journalism to the ultimate. Now, okay, you could say, okay, well, they're just sour grapes and that'll pass in time. But you and I both know with this worldwide organized women's march all over the world, you know, on the same day, that something bigger, a globalist agenda, is at hand. And if they could not take the election and get Hillary in this time, it means they're going to have to do something to stop Trump. And if they can't legally find a way, they're going to foment a revolution in the country and just absolutely swamp him with problems. Okay. So I see
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but man, I just want to say amen to that. I agree with that. You're talking about their tactics. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, no, that's all right. That's fine. I mean, you and I have talked about this, guys, for a year or two, you know, looking up to, we're going to see a civil war, a multifaceted civil war in this country. It's going to tear us apart. Now, when I began talking about this, it was because of the prophetic information that the Hopi gave to us when we were down there, Holly and I, and said that there is coming a time soon when the United States would have a civil war that wasn't just A against B, it was C against D, against F, religious differences, wealth differences, political differences, white against black, Puerto Ricans against this and that, Muslims against Christians and Jews. They said we were going to be torn apart on so many sides that you won't know who to trust. Now, that was kind of, in the future sometime. Now we see the press, the mainstream press, driving us headlong into a situation that's going to just cause that to happen in President Trump's administration. They're fomenting revolution, and the mainstream media is not the enemy. They are the tools of the enemy, which is the globalist, and at the forefront of that is Soros, George Soros.
Yeah, 56 at minimum, 56 organizations tied to that march, just by the way. Part of that march, Soros was behind. Now, Stan, I got to ask you a question, because I know you watched the inauguration, the ceremonies themselves. Now, I've got a question for you, and I've been asking everyone I can about this one situation. Did you see, I don't know, I think it was like 2.5 minutes into his address, when the military, five military, ultimately six, came down and stood behind him? When he was on the podium. Now, I went back all the way to 1980 and looked at all of the inaugural addresses all the way back through 1980. I didn't see that happen one time.
I read that it was they were passing out rain gear.
Yeah.
That was the only explanation I saw.
Yeah, right. And then they formed behind him. If they passed out rain gear, fine, but then they stayed. And they stayed until somebody came walking down and whispered in their ear there and said, okay, it's time to leave now. Yeah, I thought that was good.
Do you think that was just kind of a whoops? Our timing was off, or was it something else? That's so well scripted, it has to be. And mistakes like that.
Well, the rain was a surprise, so they may have done that to bring in the plastic covers for the people up there behind President Trump. I don't know, but I do know that the military is behind President Trump. They are really behind him. Mattis's first thing of blowing up, 31 ISIS ships or people or whatever, I thought that was a great start to his run as well.
Agreed.
It's like patting at the wheel there, Great stuff.
Any of Trump's nominations to date, do they surprise you? Do they trouble you? Do you feel okay with them overall? Or
overall, yes. Former administration guy was, I think, retained, but other than that, I don't know how these people related to President Trump, because he talked to them, privately. And, you got to trust the man's instincts. If he thinks he needs somebody that was part of Obama's administration, administration in there as well as what he appoints, and that's part of his, you know, crossing the aisle. That's fine. He's in charge. We got to give him a chance to do it. And, you know, they're going to be, as he said, the art of the deal is to give and take, you know, what to give and what to take. And he doesn't forecast in any of his negotiations what he's going to do. He doesn't put all his cards on the table until it's in play. And I think that is clever. You don't tell the enemy, for instance, in war, oh, look, tomorrow at 2:15, I'm going to bomb the heck out of your missile depot over there in the west. No, because they'd move it all by the time you got there.
Right.
You do it as a surprise. I mean, you just don't give away your tactics and strategy. So yeah, he's good.
Exactly right. Yeah, okay.
Hey, listen, on our homepage on standale.com, you know, we have, Holly puts up there the photo of the day, comic of the day, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Go over to standale.com and look at the photo of the day. It's just painted by the same guy that painted the original picture of the presidents where Obama was president at the time and his foot was stomping on the Constitution. But this is the it's John McNaughton who's painted this. And, you know, you can click and see what else he's done, the original one, and plus the video on it. And I just think it is a sterling picture. I mean, you've got the forgotten man up off of the bench holding the Constitution in his hand, money in his hand, and you got Obama standing in the background, like, shunning him with his hands and saying, oh, no, no, on the right side. You know, with the Clintons and all the other Democrats over there. On the left, you got Abe Lincoln, George Washington. You got them all sitting there saying, clapping, and, you know, one is kneeling in prayer saying, thank God that we got this, you know. And I just think it's just brilliant work. You know, you ought to just go and see a site and, you know, maybe send him a thank you. Yeah, it's just really good.
Yeah, he is certainly talented. And that is an interesting, different, wow, yeah, different than the former sentence that reflects.
Anyway,
you know,
there's plenty of stuff to look at there, as usual, on her right side of the page there. We've got all these orange links to Uplift and Video of the Week.
Yep.
And, you know, like Comic of the Day, there's a couple of good comics today that she's put up. She's also put up the winners of the contest. We've drawn 10 of them. We've notified all of them. And all but three have given us their mailing address, so we sent those books out to them today. So we've already notified them by email. They're on the way as well. So
good.
Going to be good. Going to be good.
Thank you for and I want to thank you for doing that for our audience. And folks, if you're listening to this and haven't checked standale.com, do so. Check your name to make sure, and if you haven't responded, if you're one of the three, please do that. So, but thank you for doing that. Very gracious and giveaway for our
most welcome, guys. It's kind of the least we could do. You guys do the show every week and probably about 5 days a week,
yep.
And so you know you guys are the real troopers there.
Well, thanks for that. All right, what's I thought of you when I saw this. The new weather images, and I'm
from NOAA.
Yes,
the NASA,
the Washington Post had it, and then I'm trying to think who else linked to it, but the stitching of the weather satellite, or the stitching of the pictures to give some phenomenal images.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see what else they bring in. You know, they say it's high resolution, but I'd like to see, you know, better resolution than that down on the surface. But if it's just for weather, I guess that's good. But
yeah,
if it goes 16 satellite, I think.
Ah, okay. No, anyway, I thought when I saw that, I thought, wow, it just looks good. But anyway.
I went over there and thumbed through it and, you know, thought, well, okay, I'm waiting for the next lot. That'll be good. Yeah. A couple days ago, I guess you saw that 7.9 over there in Papua New Guinea.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you look at image 5, the earthquakes on our show images page, in the last week, there have been 224 earthquakes I show on this that are over Richter 2.5. And you know, a 2.5 is not bad, not even interesting, really. But when you look at it, it shows you a pattern of where the plate tectonics, you know, the tectonic plates are stressing and relieving stress. And it's interesting in this picture here to see that, okay, we had that big release over Papua New Guinea, and we've had a couple of re- reasonable ones, you know, five, four up north of New Zealand, and then up in Fiji. And so the left southwest part of the Ring of Fire, and the Arc of Fire, and that over on the west coast of South America, and up a fault, a plate line going up into the middle of the South Pacific, that's all become active. In the last week, we're seeing bigger and bigger quakes there. And I think that it's time to kind of start wondering whether the big one in California is going to happen. Now, look over the last 6 months, which would be the image left of that, which would be image four, and you'll see that I've plotted the Richter 5.9 and greater in the last 6 months. Now, you see a bunch of them over on, you know, Japan and down into Guam and you know, Papua New Guinea and Fiji and New Zealand. All that side is active, and also over on the South American west coast. But you didn't see all those little quakes that showed on the last 6 days, going from part of to the southern part of Chile, I guess it is, part of Argentina, going west up to that red fault line, which are our plate tectonic border there in the South Pacific. Now, and you only see a couple of Richter, you know, sixes or so up in the southern part of the Juan de Fuca plate. No activity other than that on this plot shows on the west coast of the United States, you know, as far as 5.9s or greater. Everywhere else it's releasing, and we know from the USGS, it's no secret, that it's well over 50 years overdue for a Richter 9 earthquake up in the Juan de Fuca plate. Now that we're starting to see some sixes down on the southern tip of it near Eugene in Northern California, in Northern California. Now that we're seeing those two or three little quakes there, and looking at all the other larger quakes and clusters on the west and south and southeast portion of the Arc of Fire, it's time for California, the west coast, to feel some big ones. So I'm telling everybody, you know, Dutch Sense has a nice site on that where he predicts it using his stress maps or whatever. Keep an eye, because I think we're going to see some earthquake activity on the west coast this year.
That would be obviously devastating. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this, and the imagery here, folks. Go to standeo.com, the show images, and take a look at these two images. The images do bring this home, at least in my view. Wow.
Sorry,
I'm just curious. What's going on with respect to, I don't know, it would be south of Cuba, perhaps, or in the Caribbean there. What's going on there?
Puerto Rico, in that area.
Or Puerto Rico,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, they rumble all the time. There are volcanoes and earthquakes all along that top portion of that tectonic plate border there. Just any day you can almost pick earthquakes from volcanoes or from, you know, seismic activity there. I'm more concerned, as I say, with the development of some larger quakes, but not a lot of them, in the southern part of the Juan de Fuca plate. Right where the Mendocino Ridge from the Pacific goes into Northern California there, Eureka. The image 5 showing the earthquakes over 2.5 globally does tell you that still the bigger quakes are elsewhere. It's only the minor quakes in the U.S. that we're seeing in the last week. And they tell you where we know that the fault line is, or the tectonic plate border in Southern California up to Washington State. There's no real surprises there at the moment, other than in the last 6 months we've had two Richter 6s or so up in the toe of the Juan de Fuca plate. So, anyway, keep an eye on that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting visuals, yeah.
Always keeping an eye on the potential for natural disasters, as they happen frequently, whether it's flooding, tornadoes. We just saw in Georgia and I wanted to ask you this, Dan. I was thinking about this. The tornado outbreak we saw in the south over the weekend, 19 or 20 dead. This is average for the January through April season in the south, is it not?
No, I don't think so. Hold on.
I know March was a big month for tornadoes in the south.
This month was two average.
We had more this month than all of 2016 combined.
Holly says we've had more tornadoes this month than all of 2016 combined.
Wow.
Yeah, and I heard, well, read that somewhere, and I wasn't even sure if that was accurate, but okay, there it is. So you're looking at 24 days, less than 3 weeks?
Well, this fits in with what I thought would happen. We're going to see more extremes in the weather as we approach these chaotic times from changes in the sun. I mean, we have a large coronal hole point at us at the moment. I had one of your listeners, a lady, write in to me. She says, my compass is, you know, like 17 degrees off. And she gave me the exact figures. I don't remember what it was. But she says, I always have it, you know, nailed down here pointing to north. And it's way off north. It's like not where it should be. And this is because of the magnetic storms that are being created here in our magnetosphere by solar wind coming out of that coronal hole on the sun. I've seen this happen. I told her, I said, look, you know, several years ago, I've been watching this over 20 years, I did see my own compass, you know, deviate 17 to 20 degrees and stay there for hours during a massive magnetic storm. And I'm sure it deviates even more than that when you get a severe solar storm coming from the heart of a coronal hole. But, you know, that's influencing not only our magnetosphere, it's influencing the storms and the storm patterns. They're directly linked. And so when we're seeing, you know, such a huge increase in tornadoes, I'm linking that back to the sun. Now, of course, people that are, you know, snowflakes or whatever are going to be saying, oh, no, 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 that's global warming. It's our fault with our cars and whatever. It is not. There might be a minuscule effect into what our weather is doing by, you know, cow gas or car emissions or whatever. It is not the main cause, because if it were, then we wouldn't have the warming on Mars and Saturn and Jupiter and the other planets. They're getting warmer too, and having, you know, like Venus had some interesting storms too that the Japanese film. This is a solar system process. It is not an Earth process dependent upon, you know, how much human activity and animal activity produces greenhouse gases. So anyway, I won't get on that horse and beat it to death.
Well, anyway, look at that's interesting. I'm glad you pointed that out about the solar system. Go ahead, John.
I mean, if you just look at the cycle of the ice ages before any of these machines or emissions or whatever they claim, you know, the pollution, carbon pollution that they say is so detrimental to our environment, there's much more extreme changes in the weather during, you know, from the last ice age and the melting of those ice glaciers over, you know, huge land masses. And that just shows that there is cycles of nature that are uncontrolled by humans or attempt by humans of weather modification.
Yeah, it's part of the globalist agenda, trying to create crisis curves greater than they really are ahead of time to prevent troubles, you know, massive troubles down the way. And I understand the psychology of that, but they should, you know, be a bit more truthful when they're pressed on it. This is just not causing the problems we're seeing. I mean, look, today China announced that they're going to have, I forget how many, you know, millions of dollars they're going to spend on weather modification in an area of China to increase rainfall and reduce, you know, the drought and stuff. They have problems with manufacturing polluting their air in their major cities, and they can't let that happen to their breadbasket. So they are spending large amounts of money to control the weather in their own country to produce better crops and stuff, and it has nothing to do with their cities and that kind of stuff, because any of the pollution stuff they're getting either causes rain or fog or gets blown out to the Pacific toward Japan and beyond. So you can tell that what they're spending money on is certainly trying to mitigate the problems on a larger basis caused by solar events, I'm sure. I haven't read the whole paper yet, but still, they're looking at solving it with adding stuff to weather rather than cutting down emissions and whatever.
Yeah, what they were going to do, I think they're spending 168 million euros, whatever that computes to in dollars, on a cloud seeding program where they were going to be putting silver iodine and dry ice into the atmosphere in order to engineer the weather to make it rain, and they claimed that they could make it rain as big as an area two times the size of France once they get this up and running, and they're going to do this through cloud seeding. This is pretty interesting. You know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, how, you know, the cloud seeding and weather modification has been a staple in the U.S. government, from the U.S. government for, you know, decades now. And I kind of tied it to, you know, the conspiracy theory about chemtrails and how, you know, China's coming out openly saying that they're going to be cloud seeding. And we know that's something the U.S. government and the agencies in the government have done for a while here now, but they deny it. And they say, you know, the chemtrails are just contrails. But it's interesting to see what China's saying they're going to do. And it'll be interesting to see the results, if they get the results that they're looking for, just by seeding, you know, a few elements more into the atmosphere. They said they did it in the during the Olympics in order to remove the smog, that they had cloud seeding capabilities that took the smog right out of the sky for their fireworks show after the Olympics, whenever that was the last time. But Stan, we're coming up against the break. When we come back, I want to get into some of the things that are on the show images portion of your website. We did not talk about today, President Trump institutes a media blackout at EPA. I think that's important, as well as there's an asteroid passing between the Earth and the Moon today, the size of a bus that many of you might have heard about just today. I'll talk about that and a few other things that Stan has on his show images page. Folks, go to standeo.com, and on the right-hand side, click the show images button, and you can follow along with us right from your computer. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Ladies and gentlemen, to our final segment of this edition of the Hagmann Report. We are joined by Stan Deo from standeo.com. He joins us each and every Tuesday here in hour number 3. Before the break, we were talking about a number of stories on Stan's show images page. And Stan, you were about to talk about China strategically placing missiles.
Oh, yeah. Image number 7 on the show images page, and 8 as well. President Trump has made no secret of the fact that he wants to stop China taking advantage of us. And some of the things you wouldn't have seen in the press, or one of the things anyway, is that China, during the Clinton administration, President Clinton gave China the right to have a desk, a permanent desk, inside the patent office in Washington. I know that because I was dealing with him at the time in 2004, I think it was. And one of the original, like, you know, the old-timers that was a patent reviewer was telling me that they were not only giving the Chinese access to the patents coming through, they were hiring unqualified people in groups to sort through patents and see whether they meet certain criteria. And I got to talk to one of those groups of people that were under people like him. He was unhappy about it because these people weren't formally trained. You know, some of them weren't well educated, and they had people that could barely speak English in one place reviewing patents like mine that had technical details of, you know, electromagnetics and all that kind of stuff in it. And when I talked to them, I thought, why am I talking to you? I don't even know if you can tie your shoes without help, you know. And this was inside our patent office, and China, of course, was sitting there sifting through all the goodies and patents and taking what it wanted without telling anybody. Now, they shouldn't be able to look at patents. They should be sealed. You know, the application should be sealed until the patent is granted and opened. And what happened was, when I filed my patent at that time, they rejected it, saying it won't work, you can't prove this. And then they published my application on the internet. It's still there today, you know, which is a violation of what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be filing the application in a closed box until such time as I file my amended patent application, or until, you know, I abandon it. And that's several years worth. But anyway, they put it straight on the internet. Now, China, as a result of sitting there looking at stuff that's either, you know, applied and didn't get to a patent stage or just been granted, and phones it back over home and says, look, this is something we can make money on. Let's just change this and that in the patent application, and we'll have our own version. And then make product, and within 2 or 3 weeks have it on our West Coast, killing the American inventors who invented whatever it was. So President Trump saying, hey, you know, guys, we're going to stop this. We're going to play fair. We're going to have fair trade. And if you come over here with stuff violating our patent laws and hurting our inventors here, our intellectual property here, we're going to penalize you for it, which is fair, you know, I mean, because they've been stealing from us all this time. So he's thrown the gauntlet down to China. Well, so China announces the deployment of the new long-range nuclear missile on the Russian border. They just moved them up there this week. And they can target the U.S. from there. They can hit 12 cities with one missile from their new location there. And the article in image 7 down there, it says the target, at least of the announcement, is President Trump. They're saying to him, we're getting our missiles ready to give you a headache. And, you know, you can go over at Image 8 and look at the other article, too, about the Russian borders and the Chinese missiles being put up there. It may be just saber-rattling, but they're certainly telling President Trump, you know, we're not happy, really not happy. So,
yeah. And the article says that the strategic placement of these missiles, it would not be ideal if they were targeting a Russian territory, that they would have to position them more in the southern parts of China if they were targeting Russia, which makes these the people believe that the United States, Canada, and Europe are the potential targets of these deployed missiles if anything were to be launched.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you completely, and there's no mistake about it. I mean, they're not being shy about it at all. I just see here that the picture I've got up there is not happy at the moment. Forbidden access. Let me just see if I can change that so we can see that graphic. Yeah, now if you click on that graphic there, image 7, you'll see that they've got that missile launch position where it is there in the black, heading over toward the United States. I mean, they're looking like they can get as far over as the Great Lakes, but wherever they get, it would be painful. Which brings me to another point. If we do get into a nuclear confrontation, which is probably coming, Holly's book, The Dare to Prepare, has a whole section which has been built around some old FEMA safeguards, you know, how to weather and make yourself a in-home, survive the fallout type shelter, plus a lot of other stuff that she found and put into that chapter. So that you can, if you're near a nuclear blast but not wiped out by it, and there's a anvil cloud of fallout coming your way, you can either walk away from it to the left or right of it, or you can prepare your home, you know, with some, you know, sand and or various other things outside the windows, and go downstairs. And she tells you it tells you how much you need of everything, what kind of stuff is the best preventative, and, you know, it may be nothing, but there it is. It's, you know, even using government written documents from a long time ago about nuclear war and surviving it in your home. Still good stuff. And I think
and I agree where we are, Stan. We are in a so-called targeted area, I guess. And Dare to Prepare does cover. It spoke directly to me when I was reading that section on preparations. So I just want to thank Holly publicly for that, because, I mean, that could save our lives. I mean, really, if you think about it, if you're not directly underneath the bomb when it hits, and you have to make preparations like that. So thank you. And yeah, you're right. I mean, it's very detailed too. It's very good.
Well, she managed to score a shelter-in-place type document from the government that was, you know, out of print and lost. I mean, it's like 40 or 50 years old. And, you know, they just didn't reprint it, but it was very important information. That's where she quotes that, tells you where she got it. But she was very fortunate to be able to find a copy of that after all these years. She's got about five different plans for how you can build stuff in your house very quickly to weather for a couple of weeks. That's all you need to do, 2 or 3 weeks, something like that, usually. And our house, of course, if we stand up on the deck and look out, I can see the southern end of the Army missile test or weapons test range at Colorado Springs, you know, and Cheyenne Mountain where, you know, NORAD and Space Command and all that stuff is. So we're kind of partial to that that section of what we need to do should they be bombed up there. I mean, we'd have to look away from the flash. We're that close, but...
I'm just curious, and I know people can read this, but like in your case, just as an example, so you see the flash, you know what it is, you see the anvil cloud forming. How long would you have to do whatever you needed to do before you'd be affected by the...
Well,
fallout?
It depends on your distance from the anvil cloud. It depends also on the prevailing winds.
Okay.
The strength of the bomb, you might have a few hours.
Okay.
You just have to gauge it at that time, but you can get stuff prepared. Like, we're in the book business, right? So out in our book storage warehouse there here on the property, we have, you know, cases and cases of books. And you can use books, stack them on top of the floor over our basement there, and a certain number of books will shield from a certain amount of radiation. And you can, we've got a sandy backyard, a hard scrabble, I guess you call it, just sand and rocks. You can shovel that stuff into black bags and put it against your windows and a certain number of feet of that, and that shields you from radiation that falls onto the ground that might come through the window.
Right.
And then you can, you know, we've got, what do you call it, these, chipboard, you know, like marine ply boards and stuff that we use to line the garage when you're putting insulation in. And you can use those things, they're 4x8 sheets, to put stuff over a smaller area in the basement and put your books or dirt and sand or whatever you want to use, concrete blocks, over the top of that, and you hunker down in that for that two-week period and only come out for short periods into the main basement. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to do it. But, okay. You know, you need to know the exact amounts and thicknesses of every kind of material, if you got steel sheet or, you know, lead or whatever, and all that's in the book. And so we're prepared here as best we can be. I'm sure that we could probably be better, but, you know, real life goes on in the meantime.
Sure, but I believe that gives our listeners a good idea what they can expect from Dare to Prepare. I think that's really, folks, see, now that's applicable to Stan and Holly, and of course, same thing with us. So, this is, to me, is an invaluable tool. It's the encyclopedia, the final word, I think, in preparation, Dare to Prepare. So,
I guess, you know, you mentioned, I think it was Joe mentioned before the break about that asteroid coming between the Earth and the Moon tonight. You know, it's a relatively slow asteroid. It's only going at about, you know, it's probably even less than escape velocity for a satellite getting away from the Earth. It's 16,600 miles per hour. And it's about, you know, 70% of the way to the Moon from us, so it's closer to the Moon than it is to us. And it's somewhere they measure it different ways. It tumbles from 13 to 46 feet across. And it would make a hurt if it hit the planet, but it's not going to at this point. However, it is interesting that it's, to quote them, a newly discovered asteroid. What more awaits us out there? There are thousands of them out there they can't even see yet.
Mm.
And then that's two of these in 3 weeks' time. And they're saying it's part of a lot of debris from an asteroid impact or coming very close to the Earth 400 million years ago or something like that, and this is the aftershowers of that, and it just is a function of that. But you got to wonder what's making it happen now. There's just so much going on,
man. And like you said, there's always the threat of rogue asteroids because the undetectability of many of them, and for whatever reason. And we get things like today. I don't know how long the asteroid was identified as passing by today, but oftentimes we see these kind of things happen, and we don't know till it's passed that it has happened, which is cause for concern.
You get a press release that says, "Ooh, that was close."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that last time you were on, that's what we were talking about. You know, we didn't even know it, or we weren't told until a couple of days after.
Yeah, I know. This thing is the size of a bus. I mean, there's more of that stuff out there. And to give the the scientists, you know, credit for this. They have a certain amount of equipment, certain resolution, but if the asteroid is dark, not reflective, how do you see it? If it's not emitting heat, how do you see it? And, you know, it takes some bit of reflected light in some spectrum so they can track it and say, oh, that's coming our way, for them to be able to even detect it. And that's, we need better equipment. We need stuff further out from the Earth, you know, similar, like parallel orbit, but further out so that we can check for things coming in from several angles and triangulate it and get reflections where we couldn't maybe hear. So it's serious. It's a serious problem, and one of the many that President Trump is facing at the moment. You know, I don't know how he sleeps. I guess he doesn't, but there's so many things, without dealing with all the detractors, there's so many things that he's got to organize and not do changes in one that will greatly impact what he wants to do in another one. You know, you like the pipeline, the Alaskan pipeline. Okay, we're going to make changes to that. How does that affect the TPP agreement? And, you know, will Trudeau honor that? I mean, there are just so many things that if you step on people and hurt their feelings, are they going to stop us from doing this or that? And so, like with the EPA today, in that article there, that's on the show images page at the top left there, it's image 13. You know, the department, the EPA, he's staffed it, he's got a chief there, but he's put a media blackout at the EPA. He said to the people there, no more contracts, and anything that is not urgent, and he qualified that, you stop that progress, you stop that project, and, you know, we don't want any more social media publications. There's a couple of people there in the EPA that were like field employees and stuff that have broken the silence that he requested. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're saying, you know, news feeds, news release, photos, fact sheets, all that kind of stuff. And the Associated Press, of course, is in there trying to get anything they can from employees before. They're totally scared to death and won't release anything. But I can understand why he's doing that, because in the change of government like this, look at what Kerry did. You know, he gives like the Palestinians, what was it, like I don't know, 200 and some odd million dollars.
Yeah, Obama and Kerry, just before they released, not only did they give them that money, the $223 million, they also appropriated much more to come to the Palestinians in the future. And they did it very quietly, and it's not until after Obama was out of office that it was announced.
Yeah, just sneaky, just definitely sneaky. And to the enemy, I mean, all the stuff they've done, you know, Obama and them behind the scenes and somewhat openly at the last minute, has been designed to put the United States and Israel in harm's way, to destroy us. I don't know how people cannot see what they're doing as treasonous acts. You know,
Stan, I was going to ask you about this EPA ban. You said that this is, in your opinion, that this was common or something that is understandably being done through this transition of power, especially with the with Trump talking about how, you know, bloated of an agency this is, and you know, wanting to cut a lot of regulations, which the EPA is responsible for many regulations, unnecessary burdens and regulations. Do you think that he's going to clean house, and this is the this is one of the first steps in that direction?
I think so. I mean, you know, when he bars the staff from awarding any new contacts or grants or whatever, and cut off their social media accounts, saying don't do it. I mean, he's definitely locking them into the house there and saying we're going to change things. I mean, the EPA is such an octopus into everything. A couple years back, I told you, we looked at our mortgage. When we had a mortgage, we looked at our mortgage contract, and it's a standard mortgage contract that's used all across the United States. One section of it, one paragraph said, the EPA has the right to, you know, call your loan due, your whole mortgage due, if they find, you know, that you've stored, say, gasoline there on your property. It doesn't say how much. It could be for your lawnmower or whatever, and various other, you know, things like, I don't know, diesel or whatever, if you're a farmer, if you've got a tractor or whatever. But they had such, you know, intrusive paragraphs in our mortgages that they could call mortgages due all over the country on as much as, you know, a gallon of gasoline for your lawnmower being in your garage or something. It was not limited by an amount. It was just open-ended. And it's stuff like that that the globalists were just trying to just ensnare the population any way they could. So I hope he's going to clean house big time.
And we've seen the EPA in getting involved in a lot of other areas where they have no business getting involved. And we've seen the documentaries and the stories about, you know, people with who may have built houses on wetlands after the EPA comes in and declares it a wetland, even though it might not have been for 50 years. Fines people $35,000 a day, makes them move out of their house. I mean, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of these stories just from the last few years. So there are many areas in the EPA that do have way too much power, way too much authority, and it's very broad, as you described. You know, they can come in, and if you have some kind of puddle or creek in your backyard, you know, that all of a sudden that's property of the government, and you have to do this, and that, to, you know, different regulations on burning and collecting, as you pointed out, from gasoline to natural gas to, I mean, they do put a lot of burdensome regulations on people, and it's very costly, from what I've seen. So I think cleaning house of the regulations and of the, you know, projects and the encroachment of the EPA would be a very good thing. If we can, number 15, unless you want to have another thought on
that. Okay, number 15.
Yeah, I have not seen this yet. Donald Trump's terrifying future weapons.
Well, yeah, I went through those. There's some interesting weapons there, like the blinding thing and the...
The laser gun?
Yeah.
The soldiers use to blind their enemy or whatever. They say they can't use it in combat yet, but, you know, who knows?
Wow.
The picture I put up there is of their 35-megawatt... or kilowatt, 35 something or other. I'll look it up in a second. Their shipboard laser cannon to aim at aircraft or various other things or missiles. It's a 30 kilowatt photon beam, and you know that's neat and everything. But what you're looking at there, to about in 1973 or 74, whatever Reagan was in power, I think. At that time, they were testing this device off the southern coast of Australia, off of Adelaide, on a naval ship there, shooting at an Australian target aircraft, a drone. It's called a Jendavik aircraft. It was 5 miles away, and they made everybody that was, you know, on the ship for the test, they made everybody go below decks and not touch anything metal when they fired it. And this thing fired, and the camera that was recording the fire of the beam going up toward the target operated at 50,000 frames a second. And, you know, it hit the target and burned it and destroyed it. Now, there was a problem with some of the metal targets, you know, missiles and planes, when they would hit it with the laser then, that it would create what's called a plume effect and melt metal and form a reflector that would reflect the beam away from the target so that it couldn't do any more damage. It just the process of hitting it with a high speed or high intensity laser. Now, after that, you know, and I've talked to some of the people that were, you know, somewhat remotely involved with solving this problem, they started pulsing the laser so that it would hit the target, bang, and a microsecond later hit it again. Before the plume, you know, could reflect it away, the target would move just a bit, and so it would allow it to make a cut. And then they used other tests, like forming the laser as a wire in the sky to the target, you know, ionizing the nitrogen, and so the air became conductive in that beam of laser. And then over the beam, over the outside, this is one they were testing on the Jendavik, they would shoot donuts of charged air, plasma, along that wire, which was just nothing more than the laser beam to the target. It would follow that path up to the target, and because it was like a smoke ring scooping out stuff as it went along the beam, when it hit the target, it would take the melted molten stuff and throw it out to the side and away from it so that there was no reflectivity. Anyway, this is shown as a new weapon, and it's only, you know, like a 30-kilowatt beam and stuff. Normally they use carbon dioxide lasers or something like that to get that kind of power, but I marvel at the is what they're telling you they've got. And that information, is, what I'm telling you, is like 30 or 40 years old.
Yeah.
Really
think
bad.
About that. Interesting. Let that settle in for a minute. Yeah.
Stan, we've got about 4 minutes left, and I want to make sure that we talk about this before we, because we mentioned this last week, about the embassy, the potential for moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And then also, there was a story today about 2,500 homes to be built in the West Bank. That was from today. Any thoughts on those two stories?
Well, the situation is not going to cool down over there. I mean, when, you know, Kerry and Obama put all that money into the Palestinian effort over, that's all they needed to, you know, get more weapons and more support. And then, of course, Israel's saying, well, this is our territory. We're going to build homes there, and, you know, we're going to claim it with the, you know, resident Israelis. Now, there is a plan circulating there in the Knesset in Israel to make not a Palestinian country, but a Palestinian autonomous zone where they can rule themselves locally, but be part of the nation of Israel on the West Bank. And that's Israel's offer to let them settle there and run their own affairs, but realize they're part of Israel. You know, it's catch 22, I guess, but I think we're going to see big problems over there. And Obama and Kerry have certainly done their best to destroy Israel and hence us.
And Hillary, I would add Hillary as well. I mean, Senator,
definitely.
Stage, yeah.
With funding from Saudi Arabia, what do you expect?
It's true.
Yeah. Hey, listen, guys. On the show images page, image 14 is about a, I don't know, a minute clip or whatever, 2 minute clip. Holly, you drew it to my attention, and so I put it up on my YouTube channel, and it's a clip from Independence Day, 4th of July, you know, the UFO, the aliens are landing, whatever, and the president in the movie is making this impassioned plea, you know, to fight the quote-unquote aliens. And you got to read it, you got to watch it, because it strikes at being Donald Trump making that speech. It's just so good. It's just, you know, you can see him standing up there with a microphone saying that.
All right.
And one last thing. Hello, we got 2 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, we got 2 minutes.
We're good for two.
Okay. In image 10, the picture of light, it says making a mock cone. This camera that I think the Chinese fellow developed or built on previous models will take pictures at 100 billion frames per second. And the photograph you're seeing there is from a video showing a light beam going through some mass, and it's that cone-shaped is like you would see around an aircraft making breaking the sound barrier, except this is the light barrier. And why this is interesting is the light barrier, or the sound barrier, when you pass through it, you'll see a shock wave start at the nose and go all the way through the ship and to the end of it until it's ahead of it, and you'll get a sonic boom. But you don't get a light boom, as it were, you know, from what they show in this photograph. It tells you that light is a different way to get through things, so, you know, space or ether or whatever you want to call it. It's like a donut, like a smoke ring type effect, which throws the shockwave behind it always. You don't have a shockwave at light speeds, and that's why light travels so far in the universe, is because it doesn't shove its way through. It creates a hole and falls into it because it's kind of this toroidal shape, this smoke ring shape. Stuff I've been talking about for a long time, but anyway, I just found it amazing. They actually photographed this to prove the point today.
Is this due to the ability of being able to, I mean, that's 1 billion frames per second?
That's amazing.
100 billion frames per 100 second.
100 billion. I'm sorry. 100 billion. I can't even begin to wrap my mind around that.
That's 100 with 9 zeros after it.
Yeah, that's pretty intense there. And I did check out that story, and I saw the little light cone that you're talking about. This is the first time they've ever captured the light, a sonic boom with light.
Yeah, well, it's not really a sonic boom, but what they're showing is the equivalent of a sonic boom. That cone, what's called the Mach cone, when a craft goes supersonic. But as I say, here we don't see the shockwave, you know, that makes a sonic boom. There's no, it doesn't produce that kind of an effect, so it's not shoving its way through things. It's accepting its way through things. Totally new way to look at propulsion.
What a distinction. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that, look down at image six quickly. Try this experiment at home. You want to talk about mysteries? Watering the garden, shoving your hose on full blast, you know, down into wet sand, and see what happens. Or a bucket of water like this, and try to solve that mystery.
Going to do that. Image six, folks, on the show images page.
Title, I show you a mystery in the garden.
Right on.
Stan, you've taken us to the end of another show. Thank you so much. You and Holly both, and you have a great week.
Thank you. We shall recuperate together.
Amen.
I hope you guys feel better.
Thank you, guys. Night-night. Lord bless you now.
All right, that'll do it for us tonight. Until tomorrow, stay safe. God bless. Have a good evening.